And I'm also working on my master's degree from the University of Arizona in language and culture. I've actually been home for about a year. And so Dulac, and I'm always surprised when people not from the area know where Dulac is, because it's pretty much all the way, again, the bottom of the boot there. As a young person who was born and raised in the area, some of the issues I still see, the biggest issue for me, which sort of gets me where I am today, is education. That's my passion. And had I not been able to get through those first few years of LSU, which was like a foreign country to me, leaving Dulac, and if you go down there, you know exactly what I mean. And so some of you that were down a couple weeks ago, if many of you were, I think you get to just ask anyone and they'll tell you exactly. But had I not gone through those first few years, I think I would have been the same situation as a lot of the students that we still have today. It would be nice for me to say that we still are at 100% of all of our children graduating high school, going on to college, but that's not the case. And for me, had I not had that opportunity, I wouldn't have been able to come back to the community. Dulac Community Center was originally an Indian mission school. We talked about all that history that you heard. I'm sort of pulling up the end, I guess. So my parents went to the school. They didn't. My dad was a commercial fisherman. Again, no high school. So all of that, we're generations behind educationally. So even to be able to get through that first process of, say, you know, FAFSA and all those financial aid things is sort of difficult for a lot of the kids. They don't have that support. Their grandparents, their parents didn't go to school. They don't know how to get through that process. And again, even legal issues, we don't know those processes too well. It takes a little bit of training to get used to it. And to be honest, I still can't fill out my FAFSA form, you know, all the time correctly, right, or tax forms. So just that education is sort of puts a hold on a lot of the people who say, well, I'm never going to leave Dulac, or I don't have a need to, I'll get married and I'll move on, and so I'm just going to quit school now and whatever I got to do. That's still the case, and that was sort of where I was struggling, well, what do I want to do with my life? And then I started working with Brenda, and then we went through that process, and that's how I sort of found my niche and was able to get and say, well, then I moved to Arizona, and I don't want to go to graduate school, I was at LSU forever, right? And then when I found that I can actually study indigenous education and language and reading and culture and how to revitalize those sort of things, I said, well, hey, you know, I can read about Maori languages for years now, and you know, that was very bizarre to me, because it was very hard for me to think that a little girl from Dulac could end up at the University of Arizona working on a master's. And we were joking yesterday, I'll probably end up getting my PhD just so I can continue to defer those loans, right? So, and hopefully, excuse me, won't take as long, because again, my parents couldn't afford to send me to school. So that's the other, you know, you have to be able to look, you have to take the time, you know, you guys know that you have to take the time to find the funding to get you to those places. So a lot of people, it's why even try. You know, if we can get where we can get by, check to check, then we're okay. So for me, coming back into the community was about education. I want to come back to the center. I actually struggled with working here because it's a nonprofit organization. We run through the United Methodist Church. And I knew that there were lots of hierarchy, lots of things, and I'm not a businesswoman by no means. That I would have to learn how to do. So it took a little bit, but my first goal was to revitalize this library that we've had there from the get-go, and it was used as a storage unit for the most part between Katrina and Rita and up to the day. So I've been there 7 months now, and prior to Gustav and Ike had a beautiful library that was my baby, and so now I have nothing. But we were 5 feet underwater. And so I managed to save about 3 feet of that. So, but again, coming into the community, I was thinking, this is my business, but this is people's homes. So, again, you know, that's hard to grasp, 5 or 6, 7 feet into somebody's house. So I knew that, look, I'll go do what I have to do till people's lives are back together. So that immediate hurricane relief need was sort of put in place. I have lots of wounds, you know, because I was there, okay, we got to get this baby back and running. To be able to receive donations from people and be able to give back to the community. And a lot of the assistance I received water and ice from the state or the parish at any level. The rest was community faith-based organizations, the tribe, various clubs that decided they were going to, hey, what do you guys need? What do you guys need? Different churches, local churches, excuse me, in Houma. And what do you need? Okay, well, we're going to need bleach, we're going to need mops, we're going to need brooms, we're going to need buckets, we're going to need everything. Lots of people have nothing left, right? And so that's, we sort of get the ball rolling, and we were received supplies maybe 4 or 5 days once I was able to get back into the building. And then even getting water and ice from FEMA was like pulling teeth. So, you know, it had it not been for the kindness of volunteers who come down, and that's our other portion, we get volunteer teams that come in to repair people's houses. And so my focus was, we got to push for education. I still see that as a huge, huge hindrance on the community and the progress we're going to still continue to make. If we don't get that education going, then how are we ever going to be able to say, you know, oh, we have doctors and lawyers, and we need to be able to get through all that process again. So I was actually going to start teaching GED classes on Wednesday before Gustav did. Obviously, we haven't had those yet either. But now I have to stop the transition again and focus on immediate needs of disaster relief. So I've been sort of putting that call out, you know, okay, well, I want to start GED by November. You know, I want to have those things up and rolling again, a community where the people can come back to. Because aside from the education, we have cultural preservation issues. Now with all these storms, people decide they're going to leave the community. So I was hoping that I could keep the community center as a little spark where they can come back to. Have classes. We have French classes where we can learn our language, learn how to do traditional things. Being able to come back to that place is what I was trying. It's what we still need to struggle to do, so we can continue to keep our cultural solidarity. You know, continue to keep that. That way, people have a place. I had a dance group. We have a Native American dance group that meets. Our poor kids haven't met in a month and a half now, or whatever. You know, those little things have sort of been put on hold again. But we're trying to get there. But that's still some of the problems, that once people leave the community, and lots of people are deciding to leave, and lots of people who said, I'll never leave DULAC, are saying, you know, I'm not even going back home to clean out my house. I'm going to have someone else do it. So that tears me up inside, because I know, well, the government's getting what it wants, because then all of our land's free, you know, and can keep on. We have the richest land around and our seafood, and we're not learning those traditional things anymore. And so then what happens to us? How can we say, how can we claim identity if this is something that we don't experience? We used to get together every Sunday and drink tea from the yard, get together, talk French, and have all the discussions. Lots and lots of families don't have that happen anymore. So that language, that cultural preservation, all those things sort of, it's all, it goes around in a circle, right? It all comes back to something. And for me, it's like, well, if we can start with education, that'll be my passion, and it has been. And, you know, then we can have those resources available for people to come back to. And the other big thing that I sort of see directly is that people, again, don't know how to do the legal paperwork. You know, everyone talked about the land issues coming up, right? So there's no paper trail of who owns what. And so in all of that, and a lot of the people that were helping with FEMA, you know, how do you document that you've ever lived in your house if it's constantly been turned over from generations and generations, or houses? And, you know, those sort of things, people are having to figure out how to negotiate around systems. And so, well, I'm not even going to bother because I'm going to be denied. And so being able to assist people with that has sort of been something that I've had to redirect, because I'm like, well, I really don't know how to handle that. But that's a big issue, is that you don't own the land, you don't own the property legally, so you can't get any sort of support to help you. So people are left strictly on the building to repair and replace their whole lives. So those are just some of the major issues that I see sort of happening in most of, you know, our communities. DULAC's one of the biggest Indian communities of the Oklahoma tribe. So
thank you.